FM in Cold Bay, KFPS 88.1 FM in Falls Pass, and KKQA 88.1 FM in Accutan, Alaska.
This is National Native News. I'm Brian Bull, sitting in for Antonia Gonzalez. Bison are being restored to tribal lands across the Mountain West and the Great Plains. As the Mountain West News Bureau's Rachel Cohen reports, a herd managed in Colorado is playing a big role.
A few bison jumped into a grass-lined trailer. They were heading to the Kiowa tribe in Oklahoma. The bison are part of two herds that live in mountain parks owned by the city and county of Denver. And the city gave these 10 away so the Kiowa tribe could start its first herd in over 150 years. Bison were hunted to near extinction in the 1800s. Rick Williams is Oglala Lakota in Northern Cheyenne and was at the bison transfer in March. He says it included a ceremony and a song for a safe journey.
The buffalo were a sacred animal to us. Now, we knew that they provided all of our economy and our lifestyle and everything that we needed to survive.
Denver's donation is part of a larger effort to give surplus bison from conservation herds and national parks to tribes to restore cultural and environmental connections. Over the past 7 years, Denver has given 140 bison to 10 tribes. That includes the Northern Arapaho in Wyoming and the Northern Cheyenne in Montana. I'm Rachel Cohen.
Carol Pickett Hull was remembered at an Anchorage memorial ceremony as someone who was more than an athlete. She also worked hard to build the Native Youth Olympics into the success it is today. The Inupiaq athlete died at the age of 61 at her home in Seward on May 5th. As KNBA's Rhonda McBride tells us, friends and competitors alike say she embodied the spirit of traditional Native games.
Carol Pickett Hull was only 5'4", but became a giant in her sport when she set a new world record for the one-foot high kick at the 1989 World Eskimo Indian Olympics. That's when she jumped with 1 foot to kick a tiny ball suspended 7 feet in the air.
Tiny little powerhouses.
That's how Nicole Johnson described herself and Carol when they met as teenagers.
There's nothing that could stop us. Our height, our weight, our ages. Nothing stopped Carol from doing what she loved to do.
When she won the 1 foot high kick, she was asked if she wanted to go for the record. She had this infectious excitement. Yes.
Reggie Jewell is a 10-time gold medalist in the blanket toss. He says Carol and her teammates came along at a time when men dominated the games, but that soon changed.
They were coming onto the scene with this energy, but also with this hunger.
A hunger for the strength and spirit of their culture, which Carol tried to embody. Her 1989 record would stand at WIO until last year, when Emily King, a Canadian from Whitehorse, would surpass Carol's record by an inch. A memorable moment for Greg Nostein, a longtime competitor and game official.
Carol was out there being her biggest fan and said, "You can do it, you can do it."
Over the years, Carol Pickett Hull seemed to be an endless source of encouragement. She coached, she officiated, and became one of her sport's biggest cheerleaders. When she first entered the scene, the games were held in small gymnasiums. Today, the statewide Native Youth Olympics draws thousands of athletes and their fans, a reminder of how a little encouragement can go a long way. In Anchorage, I'm Rhonda McBride.
And on this day in 1838, the infamous forced march of thousands of Cherokees from their land began, a 1,000-mile trek towards Oklahoma that became known as the Trail of Tears. U.S. troops were armed with rifles and bayonets, and many Cherokee died from starvation, illness, or hypothermia. The estimated 25 million acres they were forced to relinquish in the southeast were taken by white settlers. You're listening to National Native News. I'm Brian Bull.
National Native News is produced by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Support by the American Indian College Fund, providing millions of dollars of scholarships to Native students every year. Applications are accepted through May 31st at collegefund.org or by phone at 800-766-FUND.
Support by the Arctic Encounter Symposium, North America's largest Arctic policy event at the Denaina Convention Center and Anchorage Museum, July 30th to August 1st in Anchorage, Alaska. Registration for this global conversation at arcticencounter.com.
Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Network.
There could be 4,000 miles of new salmon streams created by the end of the century.
Salmon and mining advocates alike are looking to opportunities created by melting glaciers. From Alaska Public Media, this is statewide news on Alaska News Nightly for Friday, May 23rd. Good evening, I'm Wesley Early. Also tonight, with the state facing a teacher shortage, many school districts are recruiting from the Philippines.
Once you get the job offer, visa application, filing a petition will start. So it's going to be in the part of the employer.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by
Princess Lodges, offering glass-domed railcar tours to Talkeetna and Denali National Park for Alaska summer adventures. Your journey begins at princesslodges.com.
IBEW's path to success includes excellent training, good wages, benefits, and a comfortable retirement. Join the IBEW and build a bright future. Call 907-575-7285 to find out more. This message sponsored by IBEW Local 1547.
The Trump administration is attempting to alter long-standing regulations that seek to protect endangered species habitat. That's to quote-unquote unlock the potential of energy and resource developments, of which Alaska has many. As Shelby Herbert reports for the Alaska Desk, the move is raising alarms among the state's environmental researchers.
The Federal Endangered Species Act says it's unlawful for anyone to take an endangered species. It defines take as meaning to harass, pursue, wound, or kill. Or, keyword, harm. For about 50 years, harm has also included any habitat degradation that could hurt an endangered species. But in mid-April, the federal government proposed axing that definition. It's a step in the Trump administration's broader plan to roll back environmental regulations to remove barriers from energy and resource development. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service received over 200,000 responses to its call for public comments about the proposed change, which closed earlier this month. Many environmental scientists in Alaska are feeling unsettled about whatever comes next.
The implications of this are pretty severe.
That's Falk Huttman, a wildlife biologist at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. He says habitat conservation is imperative to the survival of endangered species across the United States and especially Alaska.
For instance, the boreal forest is a big chunk that we have in Alaska. There's a lot of it left. It's pretty pristine in some areas. So old growth forest, we have a lot of it. That includes tongass and others.
He's afraid some habitats will be thrown into what he calls a legal vacuum, giving developers carte blanche to do whatever they want, short of directly harming an endangered species. Retired environmental consultant Tor Jorgensen says one hypothetical outcome could be if, say, a company only has to worry about taking out a Steller zeider or a bowhead whale. They can easily avoid harming or killing an animal directly.
But if they alter or damage the habitats through their development process, they don't have to be concerned about that under this rule. Not having to be concerned about it would pretty much negate the need for having a survey.
Jorgensen performed environmental impact studies in the Arctic for decades, making sure big oil and gas developments up north weren't interfering with local vegetation, permafrost, or bird habitats. Jorgensen says, over his 40-year career, not all companies were hostile to those surveys. Some even shared important conservation research they gathered through the process.
Some companies were very proactive on their work. BP spent tens of millions of dollars on environmental studies to be proactive about gathering information for their environmental assessments. It actually benefited environmental management having all that data, and they produced a lot of data through their studies.
But if the regulations change, he says that relationship could dissolve. Some Alaska-based consultants are afraid their services won't be needed anymore, and the industry could collapse. Jorgensen says he expects there could be much less survey work to go around in the future. Huttman says he's awaiting the change with a mix of frustration and apathy. He says the ESA, even in its original form, cataloged imperiled species less thoroughly than other lists. But this move, he says, could pull out any teeth the ESA has left. And Hutman says Alaska will shoot itself in the foot if it spoils its natural beauty, which draws in people from all over the world.
Alaska owns a very high percentage of protected areas like national parks and where people want to see about the wonders of nature and of the environment. If you get away with that and turn it into a mining state where everything can be done, everything can be drilled, then we lose that market.
A spokesperson for the U.S. Department of the Interior, which oversees the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, declined to comment on the proposed change. Reporting in Fairbanks, I'm Shelby Herbert.
As climate change raises global temperatures, glaciers are retreating in Alaska and Canada. That's leading to a number of new lakes, rivers, and streams that could become prime fish habitat, but it's also exposing land that mining companies say could hold minerals worth as much as $1 trillion. In his latest story for the nonprofit news outlet Grist, reporter Max Graham looked at the competing interests in both Canada and Alaska, looking to take advantage of what's left behind when glaciers retreat. Graham says the glacial melt isn't just creating new streams, it's enhancing old ones.
So these are streams that maybe have been too cold and murky with glaciers like right, you know, above them. And then as those glaciers pull back and contribute less to their flows, they're kind of warming and clearing up and turning into sort of havens or just more productive salmon streams. And so you can kind of see both of these evolutions of the ecosystem there in the Coast Mountains playing out, you know, just depending on the topography and the geography.
And what's the scope of this? How many new waterways are we talking about here?
It's quite a lot. I mean, I should preface, you know, this by saying that the research is quite early. There have only been a couple of published studies on it. It's just a handful of researchers who are looking at this. They published a figure that in Alaska and Western Canada, not just along the border, you know, between Southeast and BC, but all the way up into South Central even, there could be 4,000 miles of new salmon streams created by the end of the century. And that doesn't include new lakes or in some of those like enhanced waterways that I had mentioned. And so it's pretty early to kind of say exactly what the magnitude will be, but the research so far really suggests it's going to be significant.
And there's a lot of concern over climate change and how it's diminishing fish habitats by making the water warmer. But you write that somewhat ironically, it's also creating new fish habitat. How exactly does that work?
Because this research is so new, the scientists actually aren't sure at this point, like exactly whether the magnitude of gains will sort of offset or outweigh the sort of degraded or lost habitat as streams dry up or as streams get too warm for salmon. You know, salmon streams will be disappearing at the same time that they're being created, you know, in these same mountains. And so I think that's just sort of an outstanding question is, you know, overall, for these particular populations of salmon, will the gains from glacial retreat outweigh the losses, you know, whether it's due to warming seas or due to actual freshwater habitat loss? I don't have a great answer about that. I mean, this is something that researchers are keenly sort of thinking about. You know, I think we can say that there will be some, you know, there are negative impacts, but also, as this research shows, there actually will be some buffering against those impacts.
And it's not just fishing advocates that are eyeing this region. Can you talk about how mining companies are looking to stake claim at newly exposed regions?
Yeah, that's sort of this new tension that's emerging in these areas. The same kind of watersheds that salmon are moving into are also of interest to mining companies. And pretty much it's just like as ice melts, new rock, new outcrops are being exposed, and there's interest in the new discoveries. The geologists are finding minerals that no one had ever seen before because they were buried beneath ice, you know, not long ago. And so I, you know, in my reporting, I identified like at least 20 companies, mostly Canadian companies, mostly small sort of junior mineral exploration companies that actually are advertising, snow and ice melt and receding glaciers in these mountains, in their marketing materials and in their, financial disclosures or security sort of disclosures, to investors, saying like, yeah, we're discovering gold and copper in rocks that no one had seen like 3, 4, 5 years ago.
And it sounds like a lot of these potential mining projects stand to benefit Canadian-based companies and First Nations. Why do U.S. officials care?
I think the short answer is that, on the Alaska side, there's not, if you're proposing a mine in Alaska, presumably, Alaskan jobs will be created and there'll sort of be this discussion around, do the economic benefits, how do those kind of weigh against other impacts? The discussion around Canadian mines upstream of Alaska and Alaskan communities is just that, like, the mines, some Alaskans are concerned, could impact Alaskans negatively, but like the benefits for Alaskans, are either non-existent or just like not clear. It's sort of like if you build a mine on the Canadian side, likely not, no Alaskan jobs are going to be created. But that, if there's a tailings, dam failure, that could really end up messing things up, downstream. So I think it's mainly just that, like, the impacts, there could be impacts on Alaskans and the benefits don't really exist. So I think that's, for officials on the Alaska side, I think that's the concern.
That was reporter Max Graham. You can read his latest story for Grist on who benefits from melting glaciers on our website, alaskapublic.org. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, new technology is helping subsistence hunters in Quinnahock monitor ocean conditions.
It's actually a dream coming true where we have, the tools to help us with searching or subsistence traveling.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Alaska Pacific University's Master's in Outdoor and Environmental Education prepares you to create lasting change. In 2 years, you can earn your degree, gain hands-on experience, and graduate with no tuition debt. Study with expert faculty and leaders in outdoor recreation, place-based education, and community tourism. Learn more at OutdoorEducationAlaska.com or text 907-982-3122. This message sponsored by APU.
An unvaccinated Anchorage youth tested positive for measles on May 21st, according to the Anchorage Health Department. The minor wasn't attending school, but spent time in several public areas while they were likely contagious, according to the health department, which is now asking people to check if they might have been exposed. That includes the O'Malley Sports Center and Fly Trampoline Park, the Target on 100th Avenue, and the YMCA on Lake Otis Parkway between May 10th and 14th. Exact days and times are listed at muni.org. Dr. George Conway is Anchorage's chief medical officer.
Just a short exposure in even a relatively open, relatively large indoor space or proximity in an open setting could be enough.
The health department asks that anyone potentially exposed who isn't fully vaccinated stay away from large gatherings or vulnerable people from now until June 4th. They're also being asked to stay away from other people. If they or their child gets a fever and if symptoms do develop, to contact their healthcare provider before going in. The best way to prevent measles is the MMR vaccine, according to the CDC. The two-shot series is usually given to children first between the ages of 12 and 15 months, and then between ages 4 and 6. Conway says kids who had their first vaccine on schedule but aren't yet old enough for the second are considered immune. The health department urges Alaskans to get vaccinated against measles if they're not already. Conway says rates of measles vaccination in the state are too low to provide what's called herd immunity. According to Alaska epidemiologists, only 3/4 of kindergarten-age kids in the state were fully vaccinated against measles last year. The U.S. average is over 90%. The U.S. has seen more than 1,000 confirmed cases this year, according to the CDC. Almost all were unvaccinated people or those with unknown status. You can find more details on the web story at alaskapublic.org. Drew Pierce, a former president of the Alaska Senate, has taken a new job in the U.S. Interior Department.
So I'm counselor
to the assistant secretary in the land and minerals hallway.
Hallway is not actually part of her title, but it does describe how the Interior Department's D.C. headquarters is organized. The Assistant Secretary Pierce will work for is charged with implementing the Trump administration's orders to unleash Alaska's energy potential. Pierce has worked for decades in this arena as a federal appointee during the George W. Bush administration and the first Trump presidency, and most recently as a consultant and lobbyist at the firm Holland & Hart. She calls some issues, like opening the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge to oil development, old friends.
I think I had my first ANWR briefing when I was first elected, but not yet sworn in, all the way back in 1984. And we're still at it.
The Interior Department has also hired Kara Moriarty, president of the Alaska Oil and Gas Association. Her exact title hasn't been announced, and she didn't respond to an interview request today. Moriarty has worked for the Industry Trade Association for 20 years. News that Moriarty will have an important role in managing federal land in Alaska sparked criticism from the Sierra Club. The environmental group issued a statement saying an oil and gas lobbyist should not be in charge of treasured landscapes. The Interior Department manages more than 200 million acres in Alaska, some of it in national parks and wildlife refuges. Meanwhile, schools in the U.S. are facing a debilitating teacher shortage as fewer join the profession compared to the number of folks who retire or leave. In an attempt to keep schools running smoothly, many districts are looking abroad, namely in the Philippines. KMXT's Brian Venois joined recruiters on a recent recruiting trip to the island nation.
Kodiak High School Orchestra students warm up their instruments. Sergio Gutierrez stands above them, violin in hand.
Two, three, go.
They're beginning to learn a version of The Barber of Seville. Gutierrez was born and raised in the Philippines. He taught there for 5 years. Then he decided he wanted to try to work in another country.
I think it's time for me to come out of my comfort zone, you know, explore a lot of opportunities since I'm still young.
Alaska wasn't high on his list. Kodiak barely even made it on his radar.
Kodiak was the last school district that I applied to because it was the last school district that popped out of my Google browser. And I told myself, well, if not in Kodiak, maybe the United States is not for me.
Now he's in his third year of teaching here. His immigration story is one of hundreds already playing out in schools from across Alaska. Dozens of school districts in the state have hired from the Philippines in recent years amid a national shortage of certified teachers in the U.S. Since he arrived, Gutierrez has become well-known in Kodiak. Parents chat with him at student concerts. He hosts a Filipino music show on KMXT. He plays piano at church and violin in the community's theater. He's even become the project coordinator and cultural liaison for his district's efforts to recruit from his home country. In January, he helped lead a recruiting trip to the Philippines with 11 administrators from 4 Alaska school districts.
The superintendents from other school districts would say that, why are you like well-versed in it? Like, why do you know it? Because I've been through it.
Until recently, school districts relied on different third-party agencies to recruit. But with demand up and opportunities to cut middlemen out, Kodiak's district has led the way to recruit directly from the Philippines. Sending Alaskans to recruit is sometimes criticized for being too expensive. But after factoring the cost of travel, lawyers, and visas, it's still a fraction of the $27,000 per teacher it would cost to recruit through an agency. Gutierrez explains how international recruiting works.
Once you get the job offer, visa application, filing a petition will start. So it's going to be in the part of the employer. So
one of the employers is the Bering Strait School District, which is hiring up to 60 teachers this year. That's about a third of its total teaching staff. The district has hired international teachers through an agency before, but this is its first time sending someone to recruit directly. Tara Cunningham leads human resources for the district, and she's never seen this many people vying for teaching jobs in Alaska.
It's exciting to see so many well-trained, well-prepared people who genuinely just want to help kids, want to serve, want to do better in their communities.
During the trip, the recruiter screened over 700 applicants in just 2 weeks. Each person only had a few minutes to impress the administrators during group interviews, and some of the most promising applicants had callbacks later.
This is intense to do it this way, and we know that we'll get the best of the best here.
The room is full of candidates with graduate and postgraduate degrees. On recruiting trips within the U.S., candidates are often fresh out of their undergraduate colleges, according to some of the administrators. Cunningham says it could be a game changer. But not every school district can afford to visit the Philippines. That's part of why Jennifer Schmidt with the Alaska Council of School Administrators is here. The nonprofit organization handles the Alaska teacher and personnel system and is here to screen candidates for other Alaska school districts, like for the Aleutians East Borough. She says the eventual goal is for ACSA to lead the international recruiting efforts.
So that they can stay home and we can help do the interviewing, I think that could be helpful to them. And there's districts that can't afford to be over here for this long.
While the trip makes sense for districts with many openings, Schmidt says some districts only have one or two. She says ideally she wouldn't need to recruit from abroad, but there just aren't enough American and Alaska-grown candidates.
It's going to take a lot of turnaround and a lot of change in the state of Alaska for us to have enough teachers in Alaska and in the U.S. that are going to want to come and teach there.
She says international recruiting efforts like this will probably last at least the next several years. Reporting in Kodiak and Manila, I'm Brian Venwa.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, maintaining and operating the 800-mile Trans-Alaska Pipeline since 1977. Learn more at alyeskapipeline.com. Alaska Pacific University offers new and transfer students a wide range of scholarships, grants, and other financial assistance. Apply for admission to be considered automatically for most scholarships, and complete your financial aid application by priority deadlines to receive optimal consideration. Financial aid counselors are available to assist. Learn more at alaskapacific.edu. This message sponsored by Alaska Pacific University.
The University of Alaska's ANSET program is canceling a long-running summer program for rural students after the loss of a federal grant. ANSEP, or Alaska Native Science and Engineering Program, operates the yearly summer acceleration program, allowing high school students in rural communities to come to Anchorage for a five-week program in various STEM courses. Michelle Yachmanoff is Chief Operating Officer for ANSEP. She says many of these students don't get a chance to take similar courses in their local schools.
What we do is offer the course here at the university so that they can get dual credit. So they can get credit for graduation from high school and then also graduation towards a degree.
Yachmanoff says ANSEP officials were informed last week that the federal government had terminated their $2.5 million grant from the National Science Foundation, forcing the last-minute cancellation of the Summer Acceleration Program. The program was set to begin tomorrow and serve 47 students.
The National Science Foundation right now is been told that they're getting a 50% cut. And so they're mainly supporting a lot of research. I also have had research projects with them. So nationally, this has become an issue. And ANSEP is part of that.
Yachmanoff says she's hopeful the program will return next year, and she doesn't anticipate any further cuts.
Right now, we still have federal funding coming in from, example, like the National Park Service and a few others, and we don't foresee any more cuts.
Other summer ANSEP programs, including the Summer Bridge Internship Program and middle school academies, were not impacted by the funding cut. This is not the only recent impact to the ANSEP program from changes at the federal level. The program recently removed the term Alaska Native from many parts of its website, citing compliance with federal guidelines on DEI-related language related to race. The change sparked widespread pushback. In the United States, Native American and Alaska Native tribal members are legally considered a political class as opposed to just a racial group. In remote Alaska coastal communities, scientists are increasingly looking at ways that modern technology can support rather than supplant traditional knowledge. As KYUK's Evan Erickson reports, one project that has put real-time ocean data in the hands of Arctic whalers will soon be making its way to the mouth of the Kuskokwim River.
For the Kuskokwim Bay community of Quinnahawk, the memory of seven boaters who went missing while on a seal hunt in fall 2020 is still fresh. They were never found. Warren Jones, who heads the local Native corporation and took part in the search effort, says community members were spurred by the tragedy to take action.
This was a big push for the search and rescue to get started in Quinnahawk.
Today, Quinnahawk Search and Rescue is a registered nonprofit that embraces cutting-edge technology, both as a means of protecting the safety of residents and preserving traditional subsistence lifestyles. Soon, a new ocean-based tool that has proven useful in this regard for whaling communities thousands of miles up the coast will also be bobbing in the waters near Quinnahawk.
It's actually a dream coming true where we have, you know, the tools to help us with searching or subsistence traveling.
Known as backyard buoys, the bright yellow basketball-sized devices transmit the real-time data on wave height, temperature, and barometric pressure needed for boaters of all sorts to make the call, head out or stay put. In mid-May, Jones went out on a walrus hunt. He says his established methods for assessing the weather when planning to travel are somewhat imprecise.
Well, I'd call my buddy in Good News Bay and check on the weather. And then I'd call a friend in Kong. In between Kong and Good News and Quinn, I'd kind of figure out what the weather is, but not accurate.
Thanks to the Backyard Buoys program, Jones will be able to use a phone app to check readings from three buoys placed along key subsistence corridors near Quinnahock. In June, he'll head out to help anchor the buoys to the seafloor, and in October, when the sea ice begins to form, he'll help pull them out of the water. 26 backyard buoys have already been deployed along the Arctic coastline by the Alaska Ocean Observing System, or AUSE, a program under the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. In all of the locations, they've placed emphasis on putting control in the hands of communities. Shana Wisdom, executive director of AU, says Backyard Buoys aims to avoid decisions made on behalf of communities from afar. In Quinnahock, the buoy permitting allows the community to shift buoy locations as their usefulness becomes better understood.
That was kind of a cool lesson learned of how we can make it easier for this to be a true co-production project where they're the ones making decisions, not the agencies and not the scientists.
It'll be one of several community-led projects in Quinnahock, from active projects using drones to count salmon and map salmon berries, to another drifter buoy program that will see buoys move throughout the ocean transmitting vital data about currents. As for the backyard buoys, Jones says they're yet another high-tech tool that can be used to support traditional ways of living. He says he's well aware of threats to federal funding that could affect projects the local native corporation is pursuing, but he's taking a wait-and-see approach.
You know, all these fundings come and go. We're here and we don't go. We just need to learn to use these technologies and figure them out and use them to the best we can.
While Jones is proud to see Quinnahock take the lead with backyard buoys in the region, he says he hopes their usefulness will be proven for communities across the Kuskokwim Delta.
Well, we start from Platinum, Good News, Quinnahock, Eek, Tuntutuek, Kanganok, Quigilop, up and down the Kuskokwim.
For now, the only community with funding through AUSE to deploy buoys in the region is Quinnahock. But thanks to a program called Friends of Backyard Buoys, other organizations can also sign up to share buoy data via the same phone app used by communities far and wide. In Bethel, I'm Evan Erickson.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org and wherever you get your podcasts. We had reports tonight from Shelby Herbert in Fairbanks, Rachel Cassandra in Anchorage, Liz Ruskin in Washington, D.C., Brian Van Wan Kodiak, and Evan Erickson in Bethel. If you want to send us a news tip, question, or comment, email us at news@alaskapublic.org. Our audio engineer tonight is Chris Hyde. Casey Grove helped edit and produce tonight's show. And I'm Wesley Early. Have a great weekend.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Princess Lodges, offering glass-domed railcar tours to Talkeetna and Denali National Park for Alaska summer adventures. Your journey begins at princesslodges.com.
ConocoPhillips Alaska, building the next generation of Alaska's workforce through investments in education and vocational training. ConocoPhillips Alaska, committed to Alaska for more than 50 years.
This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.
All of a sudden, the conversation turns, and everyone concerned is looking down. The gutsy party is right here in the
didn't mean to, it slipped your mind. Is it okay because everybody does it? No laws are broken if we're all committing the same crime. Well, I know it's wrong, but do I do it? I don't know, I don't mean for it to slip my mind. It just takes so much to break a habit. You know what, I'm aware that we are out of time. Am I waiting for a white light? Am I waiting for a white light? Am I waiting for a white light? Waiting for a white light. Am I waiting for the white light? White light, white light.
They know what is what, but they don't know what is what. They just strut. What the f-
A tiger, don't lose no sleep. Don't need opinions from a shellfish or a sheep. Don't you come for me. No, not today. You're calculated. I got your number. Cause you're a joker. Stick around for more than a minute. Get used to it. Funny, my name keeps coming at your mouth. Cause I stay winning. I am up like swish, swish, bish. Another one in the basket. Your game is tired, you should retire. You're about as cute as an old coupon expired. And karma's not a liar, she keeps receipts. So keep calm, honey, I'ma stick around for more than a minute. Get used to it. Funny, my name keeps coming at your mouth. I stay winning, lay him up like swish, swish, bish. Another one in the basket. Can't touch this. Another one in the casket.
Let's go.
Swish, swish, bish. Another one in the basket.
Who's the fairest bitchin' on the land?
Damn, man, this bitch is a fan. The generous queen that kiss a fan. Ask goodbye, I'ma be riding by. I'ma tell my dick pics, yeah, that's the guy. A star's a star, the heart They never thought the switch guard to take it this far. Get my pimp cup, this is pimp shoot, baby.
I only rock with queen, so I'm making hits with Katie.
Swish, swish, bish. Another one in the basket.
What is what? They just what is what? But they-
they don't know what is what, they just strut. What the?
And when the mighty sea is heaving, and the mountains getting big, what anyone believes in, I never gave a fig. But I could never fully handle the heart that bore the load. Something never spoken, something forever owed. Till I can bring you home, till I can bring you home. No, I will never really be free. Well, you live in my memory. You don't care. You most likely thinking about your brother still back there. Till I can bring him home. Till
your girl post a BM, so I hit her in the DM. All eyes, yeah, I see him. Yeah, that's your man, I hate to be him.
bitch tell me that if it's cool. Boy, my DM poppin', poppin'. My DM just caught a body. Boom. I got celebs in the DM. Boom. They're breaking news if they see them. Boom. But nah, we don't do no talk.
We don't do no talk.
We see suckers too often. I seen your girl post a DM. So I hit her in the DM. All eyes, yeah, I see him. Yeah, this your man, I hate to be him. It goes down in the DM.
It
go down in the DM.
It go down, it go down.
It goes down in the DM.
It go down.
It go down in the DM.
It go down.
It go down. Don't you hate when you get screenshot?
Hit it.
That DM one for everybody.
Rules.
I love the gram, I love the gram,
I love the gram.
I'm addicted to it, I know I am,
I know I am.
And I just follow Angela
Simmons.
I got a crush on Angela
Simmons.
They like them, got it, you bold,
bold.
Yeah, I'm gon' let the world know.
Goes.
I seen your girl post a DM. So I hit her in the DM. All eyes, yeah, I see him. Yeah, this your man, I hate to be him. It goes down in the DM.
It go down.
It go down in the DM.
It go down. It go down.
It goes down in the DM.
It go down.
It go down in the DM.
It go down.
It go
down.
Snapchat me that move.
Snapchat me that if it's cool.
Snapchat me that.
Snapchat me that. Cool.
I seen your girl post a DM, so I hit her in the DM. All eyes, yeah, I see him. Yeah, this your man, I hate to be him. It goes down in the DM.
It go down.
It go down in the DM.
It go down. It go down.
It goes down in the DM.
It go down.
It go down in the DM.
It go down.
It go
down.
Never really said too much. Afraid it wouldn't be enough. Just try to keep my spirits up when there's no point in grieving. Doesn't matter.
to get home. When I can feel at night a naked light, a fire to keep me warm. Try to leave a light on.
But damn, she was the one that was on fire. She was head to toe, red, white, and blue. That lipstick, tank top, daisy duke. She had my head spinning faster than them four bald eagle tires. I was all caught up in that American life. Two young hearts, one cool car. And all we wanted to do was park, kiss, smoke, drink. I love this song, baby, what do you think? She turned it up. We were living it up, up, up in that American life. I parked Chevy by the levee on a Friday night. We were naming all the stars up in that sky, and I named the brightest one right after her. And the summer sunset was something to see, with her leaning all up real close to me. And with a six-pack, the next thing I knew, we were in the back seat. You know, American life, two young hearts, one cool car. And all we wanted to do was park, kiss, smoke, drink. I love this song, baby, what do you think? She turned it up when it's falling up. We were living it up, up, up in that anime.
Nailed it.
Yeah. I do it for love, 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 love. I do it for love, 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 love. There'll be girls across the nation that'll eat this up. Babe, I know that it's your soul, but could you bottle it up? Get down to the heart of it. No, it's my heart. You're out of your luck. Don't make me tell you again. My love, 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 love. Love, 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 love. I am aiming to be somebody that somebody trusts. With a delicate soul, I don't claim to know much. Except soon as you start to make room for the parts that aren't you, it gets harder to bloom.
Love, love, love.
yourselves. So could you kindly shut up and get started at keeping your part of the bargain? Oh, please, little darling.
The Yunga Tribal Council is a proud sponsor of KSDP and Aleutian Peninsula Broadcasting. Thank you for your support.
Like a freight train.